Live from the HananiahAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express. Jaguars Thursday. JP Shadrick, along with former Jaguars Jeff Loggeman and Tony Baselli, provide the latest Jaguars news and what's happening around the NFL. Jaguars Thursday begins right now.
Welcome inside the HananiahAutos.com studios at Everbank Field. This is Jaguars Thursday, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. The phone lines are open. JP Shadrick, Tony Baselli is in studio tonight. First time in forever, it seems like, Tony and Jeff.
No, 2 weeks. 2 weeks
here as well. 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
But you're here. You're in the flesh for the first time. That's since a the Hall of Fame day.
Took a little vacation last week.
Well, it's good to see you back.
Thank you.
Good to see you guys. Lots to get to tonight, of course. OTA practice today, open to the public. We'll get into that extensively. What was up with the quarterbacks this week? Wide receiver issues as well. A lot of banged up wide receivers. Brian Urlacher was in the building yesterday. Former Bears linebacker speaking with Jaguars rookies. We'll recap that one. I was the only one in the room other than rookies and Marcus Pollard and Brian Urlacher.
Well, you are a rookie in some sense.
I'm the second year, going on third year.
No,
player,
this is rookie radio show, rookie Thursday night.
No, I've had some reps. I've had some reps on the radio before.
Yeah, you're a rookie.
On the radio broadcast. Okay, whatever.
I think JP might be more veteran than me and you.
Hey, here we go.
Well, when it comes to baseball. Baseball, he's way ahead of us. But this is football, Jeff. I don't know if you realize that.
Totally.
Across the street, they're playing tonight.
Paul Rell is the guest tonight on Scouts High with Jeff Loggeman, the assistant director of college scouting for the Jags. And we'll preview next week as well. Let's get right into it, guys. First and only open practice to the public at OTAs. So it's wide open. We can talk about everything we saw today. Let's start with quarterbacks. Henny versus Bortles. What stood out today with these two?
Well, I don't think it's Henny versus Bortles right now. I mean, I think it's Chad Henney's job. And I think Chad is Chad. He's a veteran guy. He has commanded the offense. He looks fine. And he's not going to wow you or disappoint you at this time of the year. I mean, really, you're going to see what he does as the offense progresses, as Jed Fish puts more in. I think really what you're looking at with Blake Bortles is how does he progress? How does he his footwork, his accuracy, his release, his command of the offense, just his stature out there. And I think it continues to progress. It's a work in progress.
Boy, Monday it was.
Yeah, he had a tough day.
Oh, that was beyond tough.
Okay, real bad day. But Jeff, you know this. Part of what you can tell from a guy is how they respond. Because everyone's going to have bad days. We all have those.
Absolutely. I can honestly tell you, I didn't watch Tuesday's practice, but
was it the worst practice you've ever seen?
Monday's practice?
Yeah.
I've never seen quarterback play that bad here. I mean, it was really a tough day. I'm not trying to single out.
No, you're talking about
all four. I'm talking every quarterback had a really rough day on Monday, and I don't know if that led to the reports that Gus Bradley stopped practice and called the team up. I'm sure he wouldn't do it just because of one position group. But when the quarterbacks don't function, it's hard for the team
anything
to look good as a whole,
and
anybody else
That's
to function right. for that matter. So, it was a very tough day for the quarterbacks. Tuesday, from what I understand, because I was not here, it got better. Today was solid, but it was very limited because of the limited number of wide receivers that were available to the team.
Yeah. I think there was only four of them out there.
I think five total.
Yeah, well, four official wide receivers are on the field today. Seven were in the
five started,
room.
Four finished.
That's the way it worked.
Yeah.
Gus Bradley spoke after practice about Blake Bortles today. Yes, he struggled Monday, rebounded a bit on Tuesday. Today showed some poise in the field.
I don't know what he was, completions, all that, but his poise out in the field today was excellent. He had a comfort level. I talked to him out in the field. You could just see his poise was there. And I think in his mind, and he should think this, that today was a big step for him.
So brick by brick with this guy. It's not going to be, yesterday was a 5. Let's see a 10 on this rating scale today. It's going to be a little by little each time.
Yeah, but you got to get away. On, and I know a lot of people kind of want to have the daily update on Blake Bortles, but I mean,
you don't need it.
Yeah, you really kind of step back and say, hey, that's not what this is about. I mean, this is about a player that they believed would take time to develop, and you can't get into that mode of what did he do today? So you got to kind of step back, take a break from it, and just let it happen. Let him compete, let him get better. I do know that the rookie premiere was last week, and from what I understand, he got back late Sunday night. You know, he's Monday, they got installed, he's out on the field right away, and he had a tough day. But like I said, it wasn't just him. I mean, the quarterbacks as a whole had a tough day. So it will be interesting to watch.
Well, call me cynical.
Okay,
cynical. But I don't really – it's not that I don't care, but I'm not going to put too much stock in any of it at this time of the year, as especially with a young player who's trying to get the offense.
No, but it's natural.
I know it's natural, but –
third overall pick in the draft, right?
I understand that, but Jeff, just as rewind the tape about 4 years when Blaine Gabbert's out there slinging around, spinning it tight, doing things, and everyone's like, oh, man, we are set. We got the guy. And then the pads come on, you're like, ruh-roh. I mean, it's – and so let's not get too excited one way or another or too down. This is a process. It's about the journey for this entire team. Blake Bortles is a part of it, obviously. And I think you'll make judgments based on the entire – what they've done in their draft, the young guys coming back for the second year, and then all the free agents. As this team grows and becomes a cohesive unit, you get into the training camp, get the pads on, get into preseason – and we'll, the real true test will start being, obviously, when you get into the regular season and see the progression of all these guys. I just think in the natural thing, is Jeff's right, the natural thing for all of us, fans probably more than any of us, is to want the immediate results, the immediate updates, the instant gratification. What's he doing? It's great. It's terrible. It's great. It's terrible. No, it's just a process. We're just kind of going up and down a little bit. As long as the arrow is pointing in the right direction, it'll be all right.
Fair enough. This is Jaguars Thursday. J.P. Shadrick, Tony Boselli, Jeff Lagerman. Let's talk about these receivers a little more. Here are the injuries.
Wow.
So get ready, guys. Take some notes. Marquise Lee,
soft
ankle
tissues.
Injury. Boot, maybe late next week. He said today, but I'd be shocked if they really pressed him. Allen Robinson, a hamstring, a couple of weeks. That's a little more severe, but still it's June. Not a big deal for him. Ace Sanders, thigh injury. Tandon Doss with a calf. Cecil Shorts the third with a calf, little strain yesterday. Nothing too serious, he said. Lamar Thomas with a knee. Mike Brown with a groin injury. That's seven. Mm-hmm. The only four up today, Chad Bumpus, Damian Copeland, Alan Hearns, and Kerry Taylor. So a few more two tight end sets today to get somebody a breather. Yeah. And they claimed a receiver off waivers from the Cardinals today, Kevin Smith.
Right. But with that situation, with the number of injured guys, this is a great opportunity.
You bet.
For some of these young guys.
Hearns.
And Hearns has a great opportunity, but also Copeland. Damian Copeland of Louisville. I mean, these two guys come in as undrafted rookie wide receivers, and that's not an easy thing to do when you're following up 2 second-round pick wide receivers. You know, so here's their opportunity to kind of showcase what they've got, to learn the system, get more reps at it, and get a little bit of a head start on them. So they've got to take advantage of it. Copeland looked good at times out there today.
Let's talk offensive line now a bit. McClendon took a lot of the reps at right guard today. What's the feeling there? Him, Linder, all
it's
the other
be
guys.
It's going to be Linder.
It is. Yeah. Still, you said that the other week.
I believe that Linder is going to be the right guard come opening day. And I'm not guaranteeing that or anything.
I think
else.
You just did. I heard it.
But I think he's going to be the guy. He's big. He's physical. Unless something crazy happens, but you know. And I'm saying that, and they haven't even had a pad on yet.
Yeah.
You know, right. So let me give myself a speeding ticket.
Slow down there, Tiger.
I'm going to write that down. He guaranteed it without pads.
I didn't guarantee anything.
Yeah, I thought you did.
I thought I heard the same thing.
I think that he will be the starter come opening day.
That's
bold. You don't draft a guard that high and not expect him to be a starter. You know, so I expect him to be the guy. Jock McClendon is more than capable. He's got great short area power. He would do a substantial job. But I think Linder, with the size of Linder next to him and, you know, him and Pazdor next to each other, I mean, two mountain of men.
Yeah, you know, listen, there's no pads on. And so I think all you can tell from an offensive line and even defensive line to some level is the guys who can't play. And Jeff and I have this conversation all the time. We'll watch drills and I'll tell Jeff, he can't play. And what do you mean? He can't play. And then you see things that says that guy's a chance to play. But you really don't know. And Linder, obviously, you watch him out there. He looks good. But you have no pads on. You put the pads on, you get more evaluation. I'll tell you the guy I like. And I don't know if he's going to be any good, but he passes the test in my book at this point is, I always say his name wrong, the Virginia kid, Boenko. The center.
Now, I just want to make sure everybody
Boenko.
Is clear.
I like him.
This is Tony Boselli talking. This is not me.
No, I like him.
Okay.
Boenko, I every time I watch him and how he moves.
Are you willing to give a guarantee that he'll start this year too? Because we got guarantee.
No.
Lagerman just made one at right guard.
If mine was a guarantee, that's a guarantee.
No, I said I like him. I'll say this. It wouldn't surprise me if he's the starting center.
At some point. You never know.
You're on the verge of a guarantee. Well,
game one. I'm not saying it, but I'll say this.
Why don't you say it?
Because Brewster better not get comfortable because he's the starter right now, because Wanko is big. He's physical. He sits his hips great, and he moves well.
Very athletic.
And so if he can translate to power when he has the pads on, boy, I everything I see about him, how he moves, the drills he does, I like him a lot.
If you look kind of that group, the rookie class, the offensive line class as a whole, look, and I'm saying this, they haven't been in pads yet. And so you got to have the asterisk by it. This is as impressive of an offensive line class, with an asterisk, okay?
Okay.
That I think that you would expect. I mean, it's been impressive so far. I mean, Linder looks like he's going to be a kind of a mauler type guard. You got an athletic center with a chance to develop into
who's
something.
Who's big, though?
And who's got size now. He's 300, 310
pounds.
What is
that, 6'5", Jeff?
He's 6'5". I mean, so he's not like a short center. I mean, what was Brad Meester, 6'3"? I mean, this is a big guy. And it's not like when he bends his knees to get in the position, he loses any kind of leverage. He plays with great knee bend. And then the other guy that I think that really nobody knows who he is yet is Josh Wells, who's an undrafted rookie tackle from James Madison. And this guy's got some athleticism. He's got a little bit of nastiness to him from watching his college tape at James Madison. He's got a chance.
And you mentioned him the night that was announced, the signings.
Because that's the day I watched a bunch of film. I mean, you can tell that the guy's got athleticism. Yeah. You know, it comes from a small school, but he's got a chance. I mean, so far those three guys, very impressive.
Let's wrap up the OTA talk. You mentioned the defensive line earlier, Tony. That's a really position, obviously, that stood out in free agency. That was the main focus of free agency. And you like what you see so far there, right? Without pads, asterisk.
Yeah, asterisk and everything else. But, you know, you got a guy like Clemens. You can see him come off the ball. He has suddenness. He has quickness. You know, Red Bryant, we talked about the massive human being he is.
He's still got to get into shape.
Well, I know, but I think that'll happen. Ziggy Hoog, he looks powerful. I mean, I think Ziggy Hoog is going to be better. This is a better defense because I think he's a 3 technique and a 4-3 under, or a 4-3 defense. He played a defensive end in the 3-4, which I don't think
is a read technique.
Yeah, which is not as natural. He's an up-the-field, one-gap type player. I think he'll be better. Obviously, Roy Miller coming off the shoulder is another guy. I think Senderek is looking like he got bigger this offseason and powerful. I like the group in general. And then you have Babin and Branch who are going to fight for the other Leo position.
That's a little crowded now.
Yeah, it is.
It's crowded, but
that's going to be interesting.
The depth is so much better. The quality of player is so much better. And you get Tyson Alualu he was the starter last year. He's going to be fighting for a position on this team, which is good. I mean, that's a quality guy. And so I like that. I think Todd Walsh, the defensive line coach, has a good room and a good group of guys. And I think they'll be much. Oh, he's a great coach. And they'll be much improved.
How does Tyson Alualu respond? It's really one of the first times he's going to be pressed and really have to fight for a gig, right? Or is it?
Well, I don't think that impacts Tyson. I mean, he's not that kind of person. I mean, because when you say that, you imply that he didn't fight before.
Well, he's a fighter by nature.
There's a lot more people in the room now.
Right, and I just want to make sure people understand that. Yes. I don't want them to get the wrong impression about Tyson because he's a self-motivated guy.
He works hard.
You know, I still think that knee has taken away a lot from him. And when you watch him on the field at times, you can see that he doesn't want to let it bend with power. You know, so it will be interesting. You know, and it's interesting because if you look at some of the additions, the young additions, they have the ability to play where he's playing. Red Bryant is now the starter where Tyson was last year. So here's the question that you have to, you know, kind of talk about if you're, you know, on that staff, the Jaguar staff. If we have Red Bryant as our starter, do we keep another veteran guy that we may be able to keep for a couple years, or do we go with maybe a younger guy to develop? Or, and also because you have flexibility, because Ziggy Hoog can play also some of that position. So, I mean, that's going to be an interesting conversation when it comes down to making a determination on the 53-man roster.
Well, and it's crowded at the Leo position, like you said. I mean, listen, you're going to keep 9 defensive linemen typically, maybe 10. And so it's a numbers game. And you look at those, you got your starting 4, and then you have to start finding guys who are versatile in what they can do. And
but that's
around.
What you want.
Absolutely.
I mean that's yeah. that's the problem that you want, the conversations that you want to have if you're a staff. When you're having those conversations and they're difficult, that means you're getting better. You know, that means David Caldwell and his staff are doing a better job.
Final thought of the opening segment of Jaguars Thursday news in the building yesterday. Brian Urlacher, 13-year pro, 8-time Pro Bowler, in the building yesterday, visiting with the Jags coaching staff and Jaguars rookies. I know he spent some time with Gus Bradley yesterday, two and a half hours in Gus's office talking about philosophy and such. Of course, Bob Babbage coached him for 9 years in Chicago. That's the connection that got him down here. But he spent a little over an hour with the rookies yesterday, guys. First off, there's not a guy of Urlacher's caliber in terms of success on the field that's been in this franchise that's around here, you know. Mm-hmm. 13-year guy, he's going to go to Canton. And
he was
it's important
a great
to
player.
Get
he was a great player. Loved watching him play because he played the game the way it's supposed to be played. He played with passion, he played with energy, and he played with effort. And he had an amazing skill set because people forget when Brian Urlacher came out of college, he was a safety.
Undersized linebacker.
Yeah. He was a safety.
Who could run.
And then you know, they play him at middle linebacker. And, I mean, this guy is going to be a Hall of Famer to play for the Chicago Bears. By the way, they had some great middle linebackers in their history. He was the Chicago Bears football team. But I love the way he played because he had great awareness. He had great intensity and passion.
And he visited with the Jaguars rookies yesterday, talking about his career in the locker room, off the field, finances, relationships, kids. Everything was on the table yesterday.
Because
it was
eye-opening. He's got some stories to tell.
No doubt.
You know,
about
because
that.
All for Brian Urlacher has not been, you know, a garden of roses. You know, he's had issues with babies, moms, you know, whatever, kids.
Fights with the media when they put his kid on the front of the Chicago paper.
Yeah.
You know, and he went through it all. It was really
he's been through a lot, and I'm sure he had some interesting experiences to share.
And you just rookies, hope guys listen.
And they did. I can tell you. I was in the room, the guys were locked in. Because, I mean, these guys grew up watching Urlacher.
Yeah, but you hope they watch. And listen, just remembering, because we're all that age and we're all rookies, and you hope they listened and then they take the wisdom and apply it and make their decisions based on, I mean, just like any guy.
You hope.
You just hope.
But you're never sure.
You know what I'm saying, Jeff? You just hope that they listen and say, okay.
Been there, seen that.
Yeah, I don't have to repeat the mistakes he had, and I can repeat the successes he had if I make the decisions he talks about. Young guys always don't do that. And you hope they do, because that is invaluable what he's able to provide.
We had a quick visit with Urlacher on Jaguars.com. Check that out as well. That's it for the first segment of Jaguars Thursday. Join John Osier and me for Jaguars.com Live Wednesdays at 12:30. Special guests keeping you informed with the latest Jags news. We'll take your social media questions as well. Jaguars.com Live Wednesday, 12:30 on Jaguars.com. When we return, headlines from around the National Football League and the AFC South. A little later, Scouts Eye, Paul Rell, the Assistant Director of College Scouting. That's all coming up on Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. Jaguars Thursday rolls along from the HananiaAutos.com studios at Everbank Field. Phone lines are open, 355-NFL-1. 355-6351. J.P. Shadrick, Tony Buscelli, Jeff Lagerman. Coming up, the second edition of the Scout's Eye. Jeff Lagerman sitting down with a member of the personnel and scouting departments, Paul Rell, the assistant college scouting director. We'll
assistant
look forward
director
to that,
of college scouting. He spent time in Indianapolis. That's a connection there with David Caldwell. He also spent some time in Minnesota. And it's always fun to talk to scouts about some of their experiences and some of their memories in scouting. And this isn't going to make it in the scout's eye, but kind of after the completion of that, I just asked him, I said, you know, who's the greatest, most talented player you ever scouted? And he said, without a doubt, Adrian Peterson. And, he said that he was there for when Adrian Peterson went through his ACL rehab. and we were kind of relating it to, obviously, the Jaguars draft pick cornerback from Oklahoma, yeah. Aaron Colvin. And he said it was the most incredible thing he's ever seen. You know, so you have a scout here that has not only scouted a guy that said he was the most incredible athlete he ever scouted, but then to watch a premier athlete like that to go through rehab and say it was that also was one of the most incredible things he's ever seen, I think it speaks volumes about Adrian Peterson.
Your visit with Paul Rell coming up in the next segment. Let's go around the National Football League and start off in San Francisco, where the 49ers signed quarterback Colin Kaepernick to an extension through 2020. Original reports added $126 million, $61 million guaranteed. Now Ian Rappaport saying that the $12.3 million signing bonus, a workout bonus of about $100,000, $645,000 of base salary are the only fully guaranteed portions. There's a $2 million roster bonus, not as much money as originally reported that's fully guaranteed, but six more years for Colin Kaepernick. Is this the right move in San Francisco?
Oh, I think it is. I mean, listen.
For who? Whose perspective are you giving?
Well, I think it's for both. I mean, listen, I think he probably could have played another year and got a better deal. And you risk injury at that point. And the reality is my guess, if you dig into the contract, some of it's guaranteed injury guarantees, but not performance guarantees. At the end of the day, it's hard to find a franchise quarterback. He is dynamic. He puts a lot of pressure on the defense. Is he traditional? No. But the way they are set up and the way they play, I think he works very well, and I think he's going to get better because he has a big arm. He's athletic. He can do all the things you want him to do. And the minor off-the-field stuff kind of blew over, and it wasn't really attributed much to him. So I think it's the right move. You have to lock up your young players. I mean, it's just too hard to find them.
You like him or no, Jeff?
Smirk. No, I like Colin Kaepernick. But if I'm Colin Kaepernick, I'm not signing that deal. I mean, because what it is, it's $12 million in upfront money. I mean, is he a franchise quarterback? You know, I don't know. I can't say that he is or he's not. But if you are, $12 million is cheap for a signing bonus.
Yeah, but we don't have a whole thing structured.
It's been reported now. And what it is it's a series of one-year deals, essentially, which gives them the right to let him go at any point. You know, so it's very low risk. I mean, this is a great deal for the 49ers.
Yeah.
This is a great deal for the 49ers. So they can let him go at any point with little or no penalty. You know, so now if he got $25 million to sign, then I'd say Colin Kaepernick, great job.
Now, you don't think any of it's injury guaranteed?
No. Well, he's got injury guaranteed, but
but you can get rid of him for performance.
At points, right. You know, at certain points. I mean, trust me. The 49ers did very well with this.
That's the perspective I was taking. I mean, you have to take that. I mean, if you're the 49ers, you have to lock him up.
But if I'm Colin Kaepernick.
You could have negotiated harder.
Right. Play one more year, right? I mean, play another year. Play it out. See what happens. And if they have to franchise you, that's instantly the franchise tag.
Like 16, 17 million.
Yeah, 16, 17 million. But it's going to go up at that point. I mean, the going rate for a starting quarterback is ballpark. You know, they kind of do this little figure where they come up with a formula that a quarterback should be worth like 16 point something or others percent of the salary cap, which that number puts it right around $20 million ballpark. And the cap just went up, what, another $10 million? You know, the cap's projected to go up again, so that number's going to keep climbing. And Kaepernick, in my opinion, did, if he is a franchise quarterback, and I'm not saying that he is, it's a subpar deal.
I love the deal for the 49ers.
I just have nightmares of that long-legged son of a gun running up and down Wembley Stadium.
A lot of people do.
No doubt. A report surfacing this week that Brian Urlacher, we just mentioned him, to the Cowboys to replace injured linebacker Sean Lee. Urlacher told ESPN he's open to returning in a right situation. Rod Marinelli, he's the defensive coordinator there, of course. He spent time with Urlacher in Chicago. But when asked if the Cowboys were working on a deal with Urlacher, Jerry Jones said a one-word answer, no. But...
do you believe it? No.
Who knows? I don't know. But a year off out of the game on TV, could Urlacher come back and be effective in the league?
He could be a solid player. He's not going to be Brian Urlacher, so you have to set your expectations. But could he be a solid middle linebacker, first and second down guy who could play tackle to tackle? Absolutely.
Maybe.
Is he going to be the guy that played all three downs and ran around?
Well, he hadn't done that for a couple
years. That's what I'm saying. But I think he could be a first and second down linebacker because he's so smart. He has so much experience, and what he lacks physically now because of age and time off, I think just the instincts and what he's, you know, the smarts that a player like that has, I think he could be a middle of the road type of guy. I mean, is he going to be Sean Lee? No.
Better on the field than he is in the booth.
Or on you didn't like him on the set?
No, I liked him on the set when he did commercials now. I mean, some of his commercials were pretty cool.
But not as
I never even saw him.
Yeah, as an analyst, he's on like Fox Sportsnet.
One.
Yeah.
Or Fox which I don't think I've ever watched.
Whatever it is.
So. What station?
But that's hard.
Anyone know?
I mean, to try to take 1 year off and mentally you've pulled back away from the game and then to get back into the game, I know for me that would have been nearly impossible.
We'll finish.
Maybe for Brian not. I don't know.
Well, let's find out. Impossible?
For me, it would have been.
$4 million, would you have figured it out?
It would have been nearly impossible.
Things.
I mean, money and everything.
I'm joking with you. But because you got to remember, he retired because of a dispute with the Bears. It wasn't like he was done. He was still playing good football.
Okay.
No, but good. No, I'm not saying great, but he was playing good first, second down football.
And there were changes in the front office.
Absolutely.
There,
I still think he could. I still think he could.
All right. We'll find out, I guess. Last Friday, Arizona's Darrell Washington suspended a year, violated the league's substances of abuse policy, marijuana. Last week, Will Hill suspended for the first six games of 2014. Third time in 3 years he's had trouble.
Cut.
And on Monday, he was whacked by the Giants. Does the league do enough to curb drug and alcohol use? Do they do enough?
Well, number one, these are grown adults, and you look at society and culture in general, there's a lot of people drinking alcohol, which is illegal, over 21, and there's a lot of people smoking weed, which is not legal unless you live in Colorado or Washington or a lot of states and you have some medical purpose for smoking it. So it's not like it's just a league issue. Now, the players get put into spotlight much more because they're on a stage. If you look at the general public, not every job drug tests. And typically, most jobs only drug test the day you get hired. The league has a year-round or every year drug test. If they wanted to really, though, up it a little bit, I believe, unless it's changed, Jeff, they only test for street drugs about once a year, and everyone really knows when it is, unless you're in the program.
Yeah, we like to call that the drugs of abuse instead of street drugs.
Right.
And
it's still the issue, right?
You get tested once a year unless there's reasonable cause, probable cause, or whatever. Once you test positive and you pop, then you're subject to random testing. If you get popped and you get a positive the first time, knowing the window
you got a problem.
That you're going to get tested, you're dumb or you have a problem. So it's one of those two, which wouldn't be a good indicator of the type of person
or
that you want to have on your roster.
Well, number one, let's not forget, I mean, alcohol's legal. And so every guy is over 21, so if he wants to go have a drink, I mean, that's not against – now, you might have moral reasons not to do it, but as far as – it's not against the law. Now, the smoking of the – of the funny stuff, that's a little bit different. And if the league wanted to step it up, they would do random drug tests year-round. I don't think the CB, I don't think the union would ever approve of it. I think it would be very difficult to get that passed. But they would do. I mean, am I correct?
I think that.
I think it's going to happen.
I think that'd be tough.
Yeah,
union
but
rep, let's go.
But if that's the only thing they could do any more stringent because they already test.
When we come back, we'll look around the AFC South this past week. Also, the Scout's Eye, a visit with Paul Rell, the Assistant College Scouting Director. 355-NFL-1. Phone lines are open, 355-6351. This is Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
Jaguars Thursday brought to you by Crown Royal Maple. Whiskey started, maple finished. J.P. Shadrick, Tony Buscelli, Jeff Lagerman, 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Let's go to the phone lines. Jack in Southside wants to talk linebackers. Jack, what's up?
Hey, fellas, how you doing? I'm really excited, looking forward to this year. Just pleased with the direction and everything that's been said and the additional talent on the roster. The question I had about linebackers is I like the additions of Watson and even drafting of Smith, but are they a very similar player to a Geno Hayes? And don't we need a bigger outside linebacker to go against the, I guess they're changing the name of this linebacker now, but to go against the, to cover the tight end and so forth. And one other quick question I wondered about was on the waiver. process, because I know there will be some guys let go as they are as we go through camps and stuff. And are we still like number two in the rotation as far as picking up people that go on the waiver wire? And I was just wondering about maybe picking up some more depth at linebacker and to see if we need someone bigger. I really like Paz in the middle, but wondering if we need a big linebacker. Thanks, guys.
Okay, good questions, Jack. To answer your question about waiver wire, pretty much draft order is going to be what happens for the start of the waiver wire, and then once you get to a certain point of the season, then it goes on current record. So, yes, they will be two in the pecking order on the waiver wire. Linebackers. Now, I know that they came out with this new name for the linebacking position, Otto. I mean, I don't think it's going to change that dramatically. It's just going to kind of define exactly where the player is going to line up. Sometimes, and what I mean by that is, typically when you run a 4-3, you have a Mike, which is Paul Posluszny, okay, and then you have a Sam. He's the linebacker that typically will line up on the tight end.
Strong side.
And then you have a Will, which W stands for weak side.
That's right.
Whatever, and he's the guy that typically will line up on an underside. Mike is typically your big pounder. Will is the athletic run guy. The Sam is, you know, big, strong, powerful guy. But the way that this defense is, it's not a typical 4-3 defense. It's a little bit different. You know, does it drastically change? No. But the big change is that the linebackers predominantly in this defense are run fast type of guys. They're not big, powerful type of linebackers. My expectation is that Dakota Watson will be that auto type player, which will be on the line because he has some pass rush ability. I think the Virginia guy,
Leroy Reynolds, that's where he's lined up today.
Will have a little bit of that, but I also believe that Leroy Reynolds' best fit is as a Mike linebacker. But because Paul Posluszny's there, you don't necessarily need him there. Now, Telvin Smith is a nickel backer. Until you can get on the scale and it says 225 plus, you're going to be a nickel linebacker. But, boy, is he fast. And he's athletic. And I don't know if you've had a chance to watch him a whole lot. This guy's personality on the field is fun to watch.
Energetic,
high motor, great speed, coachable. He's fun to watch.
He's very talkative, too. No doubt about that.
And we just to clear up, we're third.
Third, yes.
In the pecking order. We drafted third.
Second.
That's what I meant.
Yeah. Whatever.
Sorry about that.
All right, let's go quickly around the AFC South this week, guys. Thanks for the call, by the way. 355-NFL1, 355-6351. We'll start in Houston. According to our good friend Tanya Ganguly, running back Arian Foster is on day 9 of rejecting media requests, but he's back on the field now. How important is he to the Texans' hopes this year, guys?
Well, a couple years ago, he was the best back in the National Football League. Great combination of a guy that can run the ball and also great receiver out of the backfield. He is huge for that football team that does not really have an established quarterback.
Dwayne Brown said he's the best running back in football. He isn't right now, but he is going to be fresh after a year off, basically. Limited carries, limited touches last year, but you still wonder how much wear and tear does he have left on the tread, because he took a beating for a number of years.
Changed his running style too, by the way, last couple of years.
Sure, had to.
Not as physical.
Indianapolis Colts court has suspended Colts owner Jim Irsay's driver license for a year following his driving while intoxicated arrest, effected starting May 27th. He refused a blood test after that arrest in Carmel on March 16th, and Indiana law requires a one-year license suspension for refusing. His hearing's coming up June 19th. More punishment from the league coming up.
That's the interesting thing.
Yeah, but the thing to me, though, is that might have been the best decision that he made, was refusing the blood test.
Because who knows what comes up?
He can hire a driver
for
a year.
He can afford it?
But if he's submitted to that test, what would we have seen
right
in that blood?
Well, he has a history. I mean, he's had trouble in the past. So,
smart move by him.
Good move. But I think what everyone's waiting for, and that is, what is Goodell going to do? I know the players have been screaming and yelling. Even DeMora Smith, the head of the union, came out. And,
yeah, they need to calm down.
I mean, just relax. I mean, the guy's the owner.
Chill out.
It's two different things in my book, and I know it's not popular, and I think Goodell will do something. But what are you going to suspend him? You can't. You're suspended for 8 games. Okay, I'll watch it from home. I mean, at the end of the day, does it affect anything?
Watch it from home and count my money.
Does it affect anything? I mean, if you really want to affect them and do something, fine them some amount of money. That makes a difference.
Let's wait and see what happens.
We will.
Yeah, just wait.
And it could happen in the next couple of weeks. Tennessee Titans gave Sean Green a 3-year, $10 million deal a year ago. He missed 5 games, offseason surgery, out till camp. Bishop Sankey, Dexter McCluster in the backfield there. Of course, Chris Johnson cut in early April. Running back situation much different now in Tennessee, guys.
Shankey's a good player. He's a good college player. The University of Washington, I like him a lot. And I think what has been proven in this league, a rookie running back can come in and make an immediate impact because it's such a instinct position, such a natural position. What you worry about really more than anything is the pass blocking, the blitz pickup. And you got to believe Sean Green will be ready to do those duties by the time of camp.
That team's got a ways to go.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the least of their worries.
Yeah.
Longer to go than the Jags.
Possibly.
Times have changed.
Possibly.
In the AFC South.
Possibly.
Well, because they don't have, I mean, they're going to roll the dice another year with Locker.
Yeah.
Yep. Go along in the fuel-efficient Ford Fusion. See your Southern Ford dealer today. Proud partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Ford, go further. Let's get into Scout's Eye. Jeff, you sat down today with Paul Rell.
Yeah, the assistant director of college scouting.
Yes.
And who was brought on with David Caldwell. And we really focused in on a couple defensive guys. One of them, Chris Smith, defensive end, and the other one, Aaron Colvin, the draft pick out of Oklahoma, who tore his ACL at the Senior Bowl. And here's what he had to say. Welcome into this week's edition of Scout's Eye. I'm Jeff Loggeman, and joining us this week is Paul Rell. And, Paul, your title is assistant director of college scouting, correct?
Correct, yes.
You know, you get to cover a lot of guys in the country. I know there's a lot of overlap with you and Kyle O'Brien, who we had on last week with Scout's Eye. And I want to focus in this week on three different guys. And let's start with Chris Smith, the defensive end from Arkansas. When did you first see him, and what were your first impressions of him?
Well, I first saw Chris in about the third week of September. So I was in there into Arkansas early in the year. When I first saw Chris, the one thing that immediately jumps out to you is how hard this guy plays. You know, we have a saying around here from Coach Bradley on down that we want code black players, and Chris Smith is a code black player. He's going to play 100% on every snap. He brings a certain element of toughness to his game. He's got good athletic ability. Chris does not have ideal height length for a defensive end. But what he does have, what makes him unique and kind of counterbalances that a little bit, is he's got very long arms.
Long arms. And I want to add this because, you know, when you go to the combine, you got to take the underwear video.
Yes.
Yeah, been there, done that.
Yes.
And so, you know, I watched the film on all these guys, and when you see that first initial video at the combine, there he is standing there. He's got long arms, but his arms are big. I mean, this guy is built kind of like what Greg Jones, the fullback who was here, used to look like.
That's exactly right. And you know, typical day for a scout is you're going in the morning, you're looking at video, you're talking to coaches, and you really sometimes can't tell what their bodies are like till you get out to practice. And I was extremely impressed because it jumps out at you. He is strapped up and put together now. And he's a very strong player, very mm-hmm. good with his hands.
And what, when you guys are scouting players, obviously you have to talk to the coaches to understand exactly what they want, what type of athletes.
That's right.
Is Chris a Leo, or does he have some flexibility within Gus Bradley and Bob Babich's defensive scheme?
Well, this is what Chris is a Leo ultimately right now, and that's where we're probably still through training camp. We will be working through that, whether he has some other position flexibility, possibly to auto, things of that nature. What was really good about Chris and what helped not only myself but other people on our staff is going to the Senior Bowl and working with our staff. You got to see him firsthand in our defense, and it allowed you to see what he's going to be potentially when we line up if we got him, and luckily we did.
It's kind of surprising that a lot of coaches in the National Football League look at the Senior Bowl as a chore, when in reality, what a great tool that it can be.
Tremendous. It's tremendous. And, you know, kids need to understand when they come out in college, and when you came out, it was an honor to be selected to one of these games. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, you know, you got a lot of guys that are not going because they're highly rated for whatever reason. Some are hurt, some aren't, whatever. But it's a way for us to go and see guys compete against the best around the country, and it enables them to take it to show every team in one setting, in a football setting, how good they are against the top level competition from around the country. So it can only benefit you. Yeah. And I was excited that our coaches got a chance to coach in it, because I think it's a it's a positive from that aspect, because you can talk to the coaches at various schools about how a kid is and everything. But until our coaches get them and they get to see how they interact with our players, how they interact in the room, how they are in the practice field, there's a little bit of an unknown there. Mm-hmm. Where we had a week with Chris and with Aaron Colvin, who we'll talk about, although Aaron got hurt. But you got a week to be around those kids, really get a good feel for them, how they are as a person, what's their mental makeup, not only the football, but how are they accountable off the field and where they're on time and where they're supposed to be.
And again, folks, we're joined by Paul Rell, Assistant Director of College Scouting, and you talk about the Senior Bowl. And one of the guys that you had some exposure with at the Senior Bowl was your draft pick cornerback Aaron Colvin from Oklahoma, who actually tore his ACL at the Senior Bowl. You guys used a draft pick on him, a guy that's probably going to be a jar on the shelf, probably won't see the field much this year. How important is it to have corners in this league? And even if you have to draft a guy to where he sits a year, you could still reap the benefits down the road for a guy like Colvin.
Well, it's vital. You can never have enough corners in this league. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast with the amount of nickel and everything that you got to play in this league. You can never have enough corners. And we want corners, especially outside, who have length, physicality, have some deep speed in a straight line, and have the ability to track the ball and go up and make plays. I mean, I know a lot of our fans and have seen the Seattle corners, and that's where we're striving to get, and we think we've got – we certainly have some here already, and Aaron will be a nice addition to this group.
And then you use a draft pick on a guy who has a torn ACL. I mean, you go back 20 years ago, and a guy that had an ACL, you were nervous about it, about whether he could come back. And, I mean, it's amazing how that thought process has changed, that you still use a draft pick on a guy who just had an ACL, knowing that guys come back from it.
That's right. Well, you know, I was extremely fortunate for 7 years to be in Minnesota with Adrian Peterson.
Oh,
and
boy.
Now, that's a freak of an athlete and a man.
I want to know what he was taking.
Oh, I'm telling you, it was amazing.
It's incredible.
But really what it came down to is he is just so physically strong and gifted, but his work ethic was tremendous. And I think if nowadays with the technology medically that they have to repair these ACLs, guys come back faster than they ever had. I mean, and so it's you always got a little bit of a risk, but I think it's a little bit less of a risk now. Yeah. You know, I think we're seeing that already out there with Aaron. He's already moving around out on the practice field, so it's great to see.
All right, thank you, Paul, for joining us. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you, Jeff.
Paul Rell joining us, veteran NFL scout of 21 years, a handful of years with the Vikings, 15 seasons with the Colts. And now with the Jaguars, interesting
and
visit.
And if you want to see or hear this again, it will be on Jaguars.com within the next couple of days.
Yeah. So I know the other one was on there with Kyle last week, the next day. So look for that on Jaguars.com. This portion of Jaguars Thursday is brought to you by Inside the Jaguars, driven by Tom Bush Mini. Check it out. Get caught up on all the latest Jags news. A chance to win the Ultimate Jags Game Day Experience. The latest edition is on there right now from today's OTA practice. We return a preview of next week's OTA schedule and which minicamp practices will be open to the public in 2 weeks. We'll wrap up Jaguars Thursday after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday, presented by Kangaroo Express, continues right now.
I know that not many teams open up OTAs, but we want to be unconventional in how we do things, and we want to reach out to our fans. They're so important, and we got to prove worthy of their following, and that's what we're trying to do. So we really appreciate them coming out.
That's Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley today. This portion of Jaguars Thursday is brought to you by Fanatics.com. Yes, open practice today. OTAs wrap up next week, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. Those are closed to the public, but the week after, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is the mandatory minicamp. The Tuesday and Wednesday practices will be open to the public. Great crowd today, guys. Over 1,700 on a Thursday.
Yeah, about 1,800.
Yeah.
Yeah. Almost 1,800.
Yeah, well,
he said over 1,700.
We're both right.
But listen, 1,800.
But over 1,700.
1,800 sounds better.
But over 1,700. Yeah, 1,800. Yeah. Close to 2,000 yeah. we're here today.
Yeah.
On a Thursday work day with public schools still in session. I mean, that's a pretty remarkable crowd today.
Is public school still in?
I think one more day, tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah. I got you. Very nice.
A great crowd, and the momentum carries on now from rookie minicamp over, and I'm sure it'll be the same in a couple of weeks. Four more of these OTAs left. You know, it's getting to the point, the dog days of OTAs here, right?
I hated them. I mean, I hated OTAs.
Hated playing in?
Oh, yeah. Just with a passion. I didn't like them for, the main reason is I didn't like them because it took away from working out. I mean, you play all season, you get the heck beat out of you, so you heal up, and then you get into working out in March, February, March, you really pick it up in March, and you're trying to get your body prepared for the season. I always felt like those OTAs took away a little bit from the weight room and letting your body heal up, because especially as the way we did it back then with one-on-ones and everything, as an offensive and defensive lineman, you're banging shoulders, you're just doing things by nature. You get beat up a little bit, nothing serious, but then you feel like then you get back into working out, and then the season comes. I didn't like them, never did. But
well, why'd you go to them? They're voluntary, right?
They weren't really voluntary when we were here.
I mean, come on. They're voluntary.
No, not really.
By definition, they're voluntary.
No, they're not really voluntary, JP.
He wasn't tough enough to stand up. Oh, right. I'm not coming.
First of all, you were at every one, too.
Your union rep over here could talk for you.
I didn't mind the OTAs. I really didn't. Because, I mean, it really did help once you got into training camp, especially when you got
a
relatively new system and a lot of new faces. It helps get everybody acclimated to the way you do business. It gets them all familiar with the scheme, so that when you do hit the ground in training camp, you hit it running.
I'll say this: after my first year, I don't think it helped at all.
Now, same staff,
same thing,
similar roster year in and year out. It starts to diminish of how much you can actually benefit from OTAs, but they are a necessary evil. And I mean, heck, there's 10 of them.
I just hated them. There used to be 15.
14. Used to be 14.
I think it's fine for the receivers and the DBs and the quarterbacks to go get your timing, go run around and do whatever you want to do out there. But for the big guys, I think I hate them.
Let's go back to our themes from the opening segment tonight. Don't freak out about Bortles because it's a process.
No, but we're mentioning it.
Don't freak out about injured wide receivers because it's June 5th.
Well, right? And, you know, you say don't freak out, but it is a concern. I mean, you've got
– but it is June.
You've got Chad Henne, who's going to be
going
into the year as the starter. You know, we're talking seven of the top end wide receivers here. We're talking two draft picks that need to get as many reps as they can.
I agree.
You've got a quarterback who's going in the year as the starter for the first time, and you've got a third overall pick quarterback who needs to start having some familiarity with his wide receivers. I mean, that's not good. That's not good. I mean, it's a great opportunity for others. Don't get me wrong, but you still would like to have that group work together. Because if there's any group that needs to work and get the repetitions, it would be that what we call 7-on-7 group for the offense.
But I think it's more important to have them on the field in July and August than it is right now.
Oh,
if there's
anything, but it's still important now.
JP,
right?
You're staying the obvious. No kidding, it's more important
than
August.
That's what I'm saying. I'm trying to teach this guy
the
right way.
You didn't hear him do the hotels.com commercial? That's Captain Obvious.
I mean, unbelievable. That was the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Of course it's more. And guess what? In September, it's more important than August.
I appreciate that, Tony. Thank you.
And if you can make it to the playoffs, that's more important than the regular season. And the Super Bowl is more important than the playoffs, JP.
This is going to be a hell of a year.
That's how it works.
Thanks a lot, Tony.
Holy cow.
Great. I can't wait.
Captain Obvious.
Got to mention.
Hey, I just like to say, you know, the training camp is more important than the OTAs. No kidding.
Well, then.
Is that what we pay you for, that kind of analysis?
I guess so. You know what? Is there a hot donut sign somewhere with your name on it?
I wish.
On the way home,
I
think there is. Got to mention this Wednesday, the Jacksonville Jaguars coaching staff hosting a coaches clinic for high school coaches.
Great deal.
There are spots available. Contact Marcus Pollard, 633-2000, high school coaches only from anywhere. It's free. It's a full half day of instruction, conversation with the Jaguars coaching staff.
But not just coaching staff, it's the entire staff.
Yes.
You know, from the equipment manager, the head athletic trainer, the strength and conditioning coach. I'm looking at the list right now. I mean, I don't think that there's many organizations in the National Football League that will be able to give young coaches at the high school level and college level this kind of detail.
And it's so valuable for a young coach. I mean, you get to see how things are done, how drills are run, and the culture – that is on the practice field. And that, I mean, that's very valuable for a high school coach.
And a lot of things that they learn there may be obvious.
So, well, JP, you can you can teach that part.
I'm going to go teach that part next week. Our thanks to Paul Rell, everybody involved, Ryan Bonifant in the studio, Joe Fortunato for the big man to my left, and Jeff Lagerman. This is JP Shadrick. We'll see you next week on Jaguars Thursday on Jaguars Radio.